Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, the Big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network, as well as seven other video platforms, YouTube, you name it, we got it, iTunes. Anyway, they're all saved for your later listening pleasure on demand, including, of course, our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And if that's too hard to remember, try DaveTheCaregiver.com. That's a little friendlier, isn't it? I don't know. Anyway, our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Nasty word. And we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg, founder of The Caregiver Space. Say hello, Adrian. Oh, David, you're muted. We'll tell you to say hello later.
Hello.
So today, oh, she did it. Today we'll be interviewing Cassidy Bastian, a certified nurse's aide since she was 18 years old. This girl is motivated. She's done it all from private care to skilled nursing facilities. But today it's all about hospice. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is Caregivers of Every Single Kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and they're selfless and they're sacrificial and they're just wonderful, wonderful people, but they are so prone to burnout because they just don't know when to say no. They give and give and give and give until there's nothing left to give, and then they become sicker than the person they're caring for. I don't know. We got to take the good with the bad. No, you don't. We can fix that, can't we? We can teach you how to avoid burnout and survive the grief process. You know, learn a lesson, from the airlines, you know, from Delta, from United, from American. And, you know, they tell us that in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you try to help your loved one with their mask. And they tell us this because they know that even though it sounds very selfish, that if we don't put our needs above the needs of our loved ones, that we could black out and then we won't be of any good to anybody with anything. So you got to do it. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it could have on us. You know, anytime we suffer a loss, we go through the grief process. It could take days. It could take weeks. It could take months. It could take years to get through it. Everyone is different. But if you listen to the show regularly, hopefully we can help you to get you through your grief quicker than you normally would if you weren't getting all this good advice. Oh, boy, that's grief just is like a weight on your shoulders, you know, and you just have to be free. Okay, I'm getting a little silly today. All right, hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss, you know, if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Hey, I want to take this time to thank my last week's guest, Malcolm Bohum, for coming on, and that was a great interview. And just a reminder, you can listen to that interview and any of our interviews right here on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. Speaking of caregivers and books, where are we talking about books? I'm so excited. Our long-awaited third book is getting closer and closer. And the closer it gets, the further out it gets, because, you know, it's like trying to touch the edge of a rainbow to becoming a reality. That's right. We'll let you all know when you can begin pre-purchase. It's called It's My Life Too, When to Say Yes and When to Say No to Avoid Burnout in Caregiving. because we're going through a major publisher and things just get slowed down. It's like going through Congress. Things just slow down when you go through a process like that. Anyway, we're believing we're going to sell, pre-sell 10,000 books to show them that we've got a fan base that loves us and cares about caregiving and would like to read our book. So we might even possibly make the New York Times bestselling list. Who knows? All right, enough of that. Very big welcome to Adrienne, my lovely co-host,
Hi.
who already said hello, but she said it again. Cassidy, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview today. I am so excited to have you on again.
Hey,
Now we're
how
just
are
being
you?
silly here, aren't we?
That's all
And
right. It's Saturday.
well, and
Yeah.
I like to have fun. It's my show, by golly, and Adrienne is helping me, and we
You
can both be
should have
silly.
fun. Absolutely. It's not life if you're not
Caregivers
having fun.
must have fun, otherwise it's ugly. All right, Cassidy, why don't you take a moment, maybe a minute or even two, and tell us who is Cassidy Bastian and why was she put on God's green earth?
Oh, that's a big question. So, my name is Cassidy, and I'm a certified nurse's aide of 14 years. I
Wow.
have worked in every single aspect of healthcare. Well, I should not say that. I should say every aspect of geriatric care, if that makes sense.
So you
So, I've
love
worked.
older people, don't
Oh,
you?
I love old people. Oh my goodness. You have no
I'm
idea. I
glad
call them my
somebody
OPP, my old people
does.
posse.
Oh.
So, like I said, I've been doing this for 14 years. I've worked in long-term care. I cut my teeth in nursing homes in a teeny tiny town in Montana where I grew up. I was born in Washington State, and I live in Washington State now. But I grew up in Montana in a town of 12,000 people. And so when I was 16, I got a job at working in the kitchen of a retirement home, not an
Oh my
assisted
God.
living and not a skilled nursing facility, but a retirement home. And that just as I approached graduating high school, it was kind of like, well, what are you going to do? And nursing was just the thing to do. And once I got into being a CNA, I really saw a difference in between what nurses do and what CNAs do. And I, as bonehead as it sounds, most people say, why aren't you a nurse? And I say, well, you know what? Somebody has to be here to provide good care to people. And I love what I do. And as I said, I've worked in every aspect of geriatric care from Alzheimer's. I was an activities aide in the Alzheimer's unit for 3 years. I've done restorative, I've done private home, I've done home care agencies, and now I do hospice. I'm a home health aide with hospice
Wow.
in the greater Seattle area. And it is the sole work of my life. I had no idea that everything I had been through as a certified nurse's aide and everything that I've worked in and I've experienced and I've seen, it would groom me to provide end-of-life care to people. So that's where I am today. And I decided, just for the hay of it, to start the Caregivers Hub. And the Caregivers Hub started out as a fan page. And it slowly grew into a support group on Facebook, which is now home to 1,200 members all over the world.
No.
And it continues to grow. And it's a unique atmosphere. We don't censor people. My golden rule is, what's the golden rule? I'm trying to think of
Do
it.
unto others as you would
Right,
have them do
right.
unto you,
And
or say unto others.
my main philosophy is if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. Because what happened when I started the Caregivers Hub was I dove into a lot of other support groups for caregivers. And a couple things happened. First, I was a little overwhelmed, right, with the amount of
Problems.
devastation that I was seeing in people's lives. and their journeys with caregiving and this lack of support and this very big need of a place to go where you can get support. And then the second thing that happened was I saw a lot of people sharing their caregiving preferences and venting on their caregiving journeys, and a lot of people were getting cut down, berated, chastised, belittled. And I felt to myself, well, this isn't a damn support group. It's hard enough with what we go through that we have to be subjected to those things where we should be able to find support. So I've worked really hard in the Caregivers Hub to not, to provide leadership in a way that we can all work together and support each other and understand that we're all at different parts of our journeys. And I'm really super proud of it because I feel like it has become that place for a
Cool.
lot of caregivers. It's their only lifeline. And I never realized how big it was until I decided I went through a moment where it was turning into something. We had some people. As things go, as things happen. And
Sure.
I felt like maybe I felt like if this wasn't going to be a support and a help to people, then it didn't need to be there, that they could go on
Right.
their own way and they can do their own thing. And I could do my own thing. But
How'd you fix
when,
it?
how did I fix it? Well,
Yeah.
I'm big on videos. And
Yeah.
anytime I feel like I need to share something with the hub, I cut on a video and I share my pearls of wisdom, my frustrations, because in all actuality, the Caregivers Hub, even though I created it, it's my support group. It's my place to go where at the end of the day, I can say, I love what I do, but I hate healthcare. I'm so tired of what I see, and it's a place for me to share my care philosophies. Not to toot my own horn, but I provide pretty damn good care, and I stand by my care, and I'm proud of my care, and I feel like that is not present in healthcare these days. We
No,
no longer
you're
care for the
amazing.
people
Well,
we care for.
you have a passion and a true love for it, and that is something that I wish the whole world
I
of
know,
caregivers had.
right? Me
How,
too. I
Adrian, how does that get infected into others? Wish it could.
know. I have no idea. I mean, I'm certainly positive on, I like the fact that you said you love what you do, but you hate what you see. What Generally, I agree, both from when people are in a residence or when they're getting private home care, or just when they're in the hospital, if the people that are not nurses aides, but just the other people that are on the floor and are helping. I don't know. I mean, I really feel that I see no reason why people in residences in particular are so unfeeling, and that bothers me a lot.
How do I explain this? Our policies, procedures, and laws are very black and white. And we as human beings are multidimensional, okay? We require more than just physical care. We require mental care, spiritual care, and emotional care. And that's why I love hospice. I've never worked in an environment where it's an interdisciplinary environment that from the person like me to the social worker to the nurse to the doctor, all sitting around a table talking about our patients and what we can do to provide them care and to care for them as the complete human being that they are. And I wish that nobody had to wait till the end of their life to receive that type of care.
Right, exactly.
But unfortunately, healthcare is broken. Our industry is rough. It's unforgiving, and it's all about profit. and it's not about heart-centered patient care. And I don't know how we can change that other than, you know, our certified nurses aides need more on the job training as opposed to book training.
Yep.
We need more, it has to be harder to get those jobs. At this point in time, it's not. And, you know, most, so here's the deal with home care in residence. The thing about it is that most, not all, okay, I'm not going to, here's one thing I want to avoid in healthcare.
Certainly not all.
Is we have to stop focusing on just the negative things that are put out there, whether it's media or people's perceptions. Not to say that healthcare is not disgusting. I have seen some horrible things, you know, and horrible care provided to people, and they pay for that care. They pay thousands of dollars for that care. And, you know, it's a hostile topic. It's a frustrating topic, especially where we are at politically with healthcare. But I don't know what it is, but we have to change things. And home care agencies, most of them are not licensed to provide medical care. They're licensed to provide companion care.
Right.
But yet they're taking patients who require medical care. And we're not training our care, and we're not training our
caregivers. That doesn't even sound legal.
It doesn't.
But that doesn't even sound legal.
But it is. It's not legal, right? I'm not going to say it's legal. But what I'm going to say is that there's a fine line between how do you define what is medical and what is not medical. Is toileting somebody medical or is it not medical?
Not medical.
Okay. But providing somebody with medications, is that medical or is that not medical? Is picking that
medical.
Person up off the floor when they fall medical or not medical? Do you understand
what I agree with you. I understand there is a fine line there because even helping somebody to the toilet, depending on what their condition is, that could be medical.
That could be medical, absolutely. And
absolutely.
If our caregivers aren't trained to provide that type of care, then what do we do? So people are now paying out of pocket upwards of $275 a day for care from caregivers who aren't experienced, aren't skilled, and aren't trained to care for them that way.
And if I can interject here for a minute, they're also not necessarily sensitive enough to what
No.
a person's needs are. And do they have sensitivity training for these people?
No.
I mean, the abuse, the level of verbal abuse can sometimes be startling and very unnerving.
Absolutely. I agree. Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely. It is in very much need of repair. I don't know how we fix it. All I know is I can share my care philosophies and how I care for people and hope that the people that care the way that I care and feel the way that I feel about what I do, step up. You know, I mean, it took me 14 years to realize as a certified nurse's aide that my skills are valuable. What I have to say is valuable. And I hope, I mean, people better hope to God they have somebody like me at the end of their days, because it's going
to
be a shit storm. I'm just saying.
So, where do you think that there can be a program that someone like you could create to unfold this kind of they're aware that the person needs care as well as the patient.
Yeah, franchise your attitude. How do we do that?
Yeah, how do we do that?
I don't know. I don't know. But
you can change the world, Cassidy. Do you know that?
But the thing about it is
sounds
we
that way.
Our It's gonna take, whether it's starting at state levels or federal levels, where we start changing the policies, procedures, and standards for our healthcare industry. And that's a massive undertaking because look at the profit, right? People, I hate to say this and it sounds horrible, but people don't want to fix this shit because it's not profitable to fix it.
Exactly.
And but at the same time, we have to remember as healthcare professionals who we took an oath to serve. And that's people, right? And people are human beings. And it's not black and white. We have to stop. I mean, we are overworked, underpaid, and underappreciated. Certified nurses, aides, and medical professionals are jaded AF to
That's why
censor
they all
myself.
smoke cigarettes, because they can't take it.
Right. Well, if smoking a cigarette over yelling at somebody is a better idea, I would think you should smoke the cigarette. But that's my own philosophy. I think that we need to change the way that things are, and we have to be accountable for the care that we provide.
Now, I have another question. Dave's not saying very much, but because I keep
I'm
cutting in.
listening. I'm learning a lot.
I'm sorry. I mean, if well, see, if I hadn't gone, if I went straight into what I was going to say, I would have remembered it. Now I forgot what I was going to say. It'll come to me again. Go ahead,
It's all good,
We're all in
Dave.
geriatrics here.
I
Yeah.
love geriatrics, though. That's
I
what I'm
listen.
saying,
Let's
though, is
take a break, and I
I
bet
know, I
Adrian
know
will
what it was.
remember
I
when we
just
come.
want,
Did you
I'll put it
remember?
down. I'll write it down.
Okay, we'll take a break. Write it down quick before you lose it. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where, after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships, is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere. But if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmonelegonehundredwords.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Cassidy, Bastian, and Adrian Gruberg. Is everyone unmuted?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good, good. So let's get started. That was an unprepared venture into the healthcare industry, but I'm glad we did it because it really gives the whole thing some perspective. So now let's talk about hospice. For those who don't even know, if it's possible, what hospice is, let's start with what is hospice and what isn't hospice?
So hospice is focusing on end-of-life care. So hospice is usually brought in when somebody has a diagnosis of 6 months or less to live, and they have...
Is that the magic number?
That is the magic number via Medicare standards.
Okay. So it's nationwide. That's a nationwide thing?
A nationwide requirement. And so we have to have a doctor's referral to start hospice care. And hospice care, I like to call it an umbrella. From when I started with hospice, I mean, I've worked closely with hospice nurses and hospice patients in different care settings, but never as a hospice home health aide. So I really had never been in the hospice environment, didn't know really how hospice ran. And in June will be 1 year that I have been working. I have about 5 or 6 patients a day within a 20 to 30 mile radius, sometimes more. And I spend about an hour with each of them providing physical care. Usually it's a lot of bed baths. I give up to 5 to 6 bed baths a day to people of all, you know, all backgrounds, all faiths, all ethnicities, in more than one place. You know, it's not just private home, it's assisted livings, it is adult family homes, it is skilled nursing facilities, and even hospitals. If people are, you know, anywhere somebody is on hospice services, that is where we go. And that is what we do. And we stay with that patient from the time they come on services to the time they leave. Now, not everybody, this is a big common misconception, that people feel like everybody who goes on hospice is dying. And although that 6 months or less to live with a diagnosis is final on paper, it's not final with who we are as people.
That's a big window.
I'm a huge believer that our souls choose the right time to go. I've seen it over and over and over again. And so we often have patients who come on services with these diagnoses and these referrals who, once they start getting regular care and good care, they start to improve, and then they graduate from hospice. So not everybody stays on hospice and dies.
Now, I'm curious, because I know you give excellent care. What percentage of your patients seem to fall into that category?
Oh my goodness. I don't know about percentages, but I'm trying to think. In the past month, I've had maybe, I don't even honestly can't even say how many. It sounds probably pretty horrible, but people tend sometimes to come and go very, very fast. But some people just get better and they graduate. And so I've had a handful, a number of people who are no longer eligible for services, and Medicare is pretty strict on that. You know, every 60 days we have to go through everything. We have to the main factors are going to be weight loss, lack of appetite, all of those things that have determined that this person still needs our services because Medicare is cracking down huge on these hospices. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
And I assume while you're giving them their bath, while you're doing all the other things, you're talking to them, you're connecting with them, you're having a relationship with them. You're feeding their lonely part of them who are and that obviously
and the
will
fright
make people better.
Mm-hmm. And the frightened part of them, I would imagine.
Well, it's my belief that everything that we encounter with end of life, such as fear, pain, anxiety, restlessness, I feel, and this is a spiritual aspect, this is my own philosophy, this mm-hmm. is not hospice philosophy, I personally feel that it is the soul getting prepared and beginning to understand what is happening to them. And each one of us embraces that differently. Some of us are ready and have made peace with things and approach hospice and end of life care very gracefully. And some people are very, very scared. And yes. The number one thing that I have found that is of the utmost comfort to people is the simple phrase, it's okay. It's okay to feel how you are. It's okay to be where you are, and it's okay to be done. It's okay to let go. You know, and that's why I love what I do.
I bet you've been called an angel by many people.
You could say that. I'll take that.
Nice.
If they want to pray, you'll pray with them or whatever.
Oh my gosh. You know, like absolutely. I had a Vietnamese man who had passed, and nobody spoke English except this one mm-hmm. granddaughter who was his main caregiver. Mm-hmm. And our hospice is incredible. We really respect and honor people's culture and their end of life decisions. You know, death with dignity is legal here in Washington mm-hmm. state. And I have not had a patient who's chosen that route, but, or has acted upon that. I have had patients mm-hmm. who have had access and enrolled in the program, but, so when this person passed, you know, if people don't want postmortem care for their loved ones, we won't do that. However they want to, whatever they want to have done with their loved one is what we will do. And this in particular case, it's their cultural belief that you don't touch the body for 8 hours so that the soul has time to leave the body. And they were arguing amongst each other because here I was, to do that, to provide end of life care. Well, I should say post-mortem care. And they started arguing and I was like, okay. So and the son had been in the States for a while and had, you know, more westernized, I guess you could say, you know, he wanted his father to look dignified and respectful and mm-hmm. be clean and taken care of. And so it was just my main priority to make sure that they understood that I'm not here to force anybody to provide postmortem care, that it is, you know, we as an organization respect their wishes and we'll do whatever they want. And that was a unique experience for me because it's hard to communicate with people about such heavy things like that when you yeah. don't know how to communicate with them. But everything turned out fine and they were extremely appreciative, and I just really had to communicate they did not want the body picked up by the funeral home for 8 hours, and we respected that. And
yes,
so it's I don't know. I went off on a tangent there. I don't even know what the question is.
No, it was a good tangent.
Adrian, I'm sorry. You had a question that you wrote down, and I didn't give you a chance to ask that.
Yeah, this had to do with healthcare, though, not with hospice. I did want to know, Cassidy, are you work with a company that provides hospice in home, not hospital hospice?
So,
or hospice facility, not an in other words, are you working in someone's home or within a hospice facility?
So, we go anywhere somebody is on hospice. If you live in a van and you're on hospice, I'm going to come there.
Okay, so
you clip your nails. We're going
to you go to the patient. Okay.
Anywhere. If it's a hospital, that's adult family homes, skilled nursing facilities, private homes, any single where. But we do have a hospice care center that is designed for people who are on services, whether they are in their personal homes. And not always, well, I think we usually do people who go there from their homes, but it's mainly designed for our patients who their symptoms, whether it's restlessness, pain, anxiety, cannot be managed with what we have available to us with our nurses and our comfort kids. You know, when they go to the hospice care center, it is because they are in distress and our doctors are on site and our staff is on site 24/7 to be able to provide them care. But
okay, so if someone is at home and being on hospice and being seen by you, is there another nurse that's there all the time at that point?
So we are on top of care, not in lieu of care. So that means family caregivers. Most of the time we have family caregivers in private homes providing care. We have paid caregivers. And then we have a lot of people on services in assisted living, skilled nursing facilities, and adult family homes. And so there's always a caregiver there, whether it's a family caregiver or a professional caregiver, because we are only in home and with that person for maximum of an hour and a half, once or twice or three times a week.
So there's no such thing as 24-hour hospice, right?
Not that I can find. I don't believe that hospice would ever cover a home health aide coming to stay with a patient for 24/7. It won't. There's no way for that to happen. But
unless some rich person wants to pay them.
Well, then they'll have to hire a paid caregiver.
They'll have to hire a paid caregiver.
Right.
Exactly.
They're not hospice.
Or that person.
Yeah, we are completely Medicare funded, and Medicare has a strict guidelines of saying what we can do and what we cannot do, and that is not one of them.
Now, I know this is a chance to plug your own company, but are all hospices the same?
No.
Are some better than others?
So, some hospices. My hospice
I know
is...
they don't have you working for them, and that puts them in a different category.
So... there are nonprofit hospices and there are for-profit hospices. And I'm going to give an example of a horrible hospice. So there was a hospice in Texas, I do believe, that was a for-profit hospice that just got shut down, and they had over $60 million worth of fraudulent charges to Medicare and hospice. Wow. So they were admitting people who are not qualified to be on hospice. They were medicating them for things that they shouldn't have been medicated for.
Wow.
And these are grievous, grievous things that they've done. I mean, you know, this is... pardon my French, but this is the shit that gives us the horrible, horrible reputations. You know, not every caregiver and not every hospice and not every hospital and not every adult family home, skilled nursing and assisted living facility is horrible. But there are a lot of them that are in dire need of reform and change and to be shut down.
Yeah.
So how do you shift through the crap? That's the question, because they are a dime a dozen. They are everywhere. My philosophy is, if you're not being provided the common respect, care, dignity, and medical choices, then you need to keep searching. You need to keep finding. You need to keep going through and asking questions and not settling for subpar care. You know, I mean, if your doctor's not going to listen to you, find another doctor. We all do it all the time. But it's the same thing with assisted livings and skilled nursing facilities and hospices. Now, if we, nobody on hospice should ever be in pain. Nobody on hospice should ever be in distress. And our caregivers, our hospice caregivers, should be skilled and educated on end of life. And if those things don't happen, we need to keep searching. So just know that there are more than one hospice. And it doesn't matter that maybe that facility uses that specific hospice, right? They're in connection with that hospice to make sure that that hospice cares for the patients in that facility. But if you find something different and you aren't satisfied, you have the right to change hospices. And Dave, why don't you tell me about this assisted living hospice that you were talking about?
Yeah, my mother was in an assisted living and they did not allow hospice there. So they asked her or us to, they had a referral that was, you know, a few miles down the road. And I guess they just didn't, they chose not to have that dynamic of people dying in their rooms a part of their assisted living place. So we went there instead. We obviously respected their wishes because we didn't have a choice. Because they were very, very nice about it because she'd been there for a couple of years and we had a great relationship. And there was a different dynamic in the other assisted living place that was exclusively hospice. You know, it was almost like entering a church. You know, it's kind of quiet and very respectful. People were all in their rooms, you know, watching TV, all jacked up on morphine, dying. You know, some only had a day to go, some a week, some a month, and so on. And so my mother was very comfortable there. She only lasted 2 days there because she didn't want any tubes, and so they mm-hmm. were not feeding her. But she developed a bladder infection because mm-hmm. you could see in the bag it was like red coming out, and so this was very painful to her. And yet, how do you do it? Well, she's not drinking enough liquids, but you know she doesn't want liquids. So, will enough morphine take away the pain of a bladder infection?
I would say so. Again, let's see.
Anything.
I am not a nurse. I am not, that is not within my scope of practice to say that that is the case. But what I do know is I look at.
They gave her antibiotics and that seemed to do the
right.
trick.
Right. So oftentimes, basically, when people come on hospice, we are all under the assumption that we are no longer going to take life-saving measures for this person. They right. have chosen, their powers of attorney have chosen that they do not want to keep dealing with other doctors and appointments right. and hospitals and this and that and this and that. And so it's our job as a hospice to educate families and people about what exactly is going to happen when they come on services and how this all goes. Anybody can revoke hospice at any time. Mm. If at any time you say, I'm done with this, I don't want to do it, we respect that.
I have a loaded question. I know in my part of the world, which is the East Coast, it's often thought that when someone is put into hospice who is very near end of care, they may have come out of a residence and been placed in a hospice facility, they weren't sent home, but it's usually within the facility. And people have said, well, they give them enough morphine to help them pass on.
Is hospice designed to hasten the death process?
Absolutely
is that what you're asking?
Not. Absolutely not.
But it often does.
Well, I would say there's a common misconception with that. And this is what this is how I want you to think of it. Okay. If somebody mm-hmm. asks you this question or they tell you, well, hospice just kills them sooner. And I don't want my loved one to be through that. Because I want her here, him or her here for as long as possible. So this is what I want you to understand. Our bodies are vessels. They are a vessel for our soul. And bodies get tired. And the end of life process is physically the body shutting down. So I want you to Yes. think about what it would be like to have your body shut down with absolutely no pain medicine. For you to live through every single agonizing turn, every time somebody has to change you, to dress you, to feed you, to any of that. I want you to think about that pain. That's a lot of pain. And I don't believe mm-hmm. anybody should ever have to go through that much pain at the end of their life. And everybody has a different tolerance for pain medication. Everybody reacts differently to pain medication. And hospice is never about hastening death, but it is always about providing you with comfort and respect and dignity at the end of your life through every single aspect of end-of-life care, from transitioning to actively transitioning. And there's no reason anybody should be in distress. And mm-hmm. it's hard for us to grasp that by heavily medicating our loved ones that we are hastening their death. You know, we shouldn't, I understand how that misconception is out there, but I just feel like, you know, I don't think in my entire year with hospice, and as I said, I'm with a very, very good hospice. Mm-hmm. I respect the people that I work for. I respect the community that I work for. And I've never seen anybody get pain meds who did not need it. I've never seen anybody over-medicated to the point that they cannot communicate. I've never seen that, because we are not about knowing people so that they just are mm-hmm. in a whacked out state until they die. It's not about that. It's about allowing somebody to breathe easier, to be free of anxiety, to be free of restlessness, and to be free of pain. So, and that's what our comfort kits provide. Every single okay. hospice provide mm-hmm. a comfort kit. So that's how I feel about it.
I've only had really good experience with hospice, and I found that the people cared as much for the family and the family caregivers. And I mean, they pulled me aside, they sat me down, they talked to me for like almost like an intake interview mm-hmm. to find out if it was, you know, what I needed at this point in time. And it was a wonderful experience. Yeah, this was where my mother was in Florida. It was great.
Yeah, my experience was great too. So when you say, you know, for those of you who have this bad reputation of hospice, I don't know what you're talking about, because all of my experience has been good. So, but anyway, we're going to take another break and we'll be right back. So don't go away.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps, ranging from denial, I don't believe this is happening. Anger, oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening. To a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this? To depression, which is a very serious thing, because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout. as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the caregiver's caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you and ultimately an investment in them.
And we're back with Adrian Gruberg and Cassidy Bastian. And I have a great question. When... Right after my mother died, or just before she died, you know, she had a lot of visitors because people find out, you know, that it's coming quick. And so you can have like almost a procession of people coming in. And a lot of people, you know, started uncontrollably crying. And the hospice person who was there was great. It seems like they were there more for the people who were visiting, who were having trouble with this transition period, and they were just really, really good, praying for, you know, my niece, for example, who was just so, you know, overwrought. And explain that. So hospice is not just for the patient, huh?
No. So we consider our families just as important as our patients, because my personal philosophy, I keep saying my personal philosophies, but,
that's my what makes personal... you so great. You've got all these personal philosophies.
I know, right? But all these, so my personal philosophy, which I completely forgot at this point in time, what were we talking about?
talking about not only for the patient.
Okay. So my philosophy is that death is for the living. We are the ones who are left here with that void, right? I believe that when our bodies leave our souls, they, wherever they go, they're at peace and they're with their loved ones. So I think for me personally, that's something that just comes innately to me, to be able to provide comfort to people who are grieving. And It was funny because before I even started with hospice, I said to myself, I had this real conversation, you know, Cassidy, are you really as good as you think you are? And are you really ready for this? The totality that is hospice. Are you ready for that? And I didn't know if I was ready for that until I got into that. And I'll share a story with you that happened to me last week that I think speaks volumes about the people who provide hospice care and who are of the same philosophies as I am, because I cannot be the only one out there. I know I'm not the only one out there. I'm just the only one speaking up about it.
We hope not.
that's the difference. But I had a patient who was in stage dementia and or Alzheimer's, and she was such a light. And we had such beautiful conversations, and I would play, I would put Pandora 40s in the morning on when I gave her a bed bath every week.
Great. Twice
a week, because,
wow, you were a full service hospice.
Oh my goodness. But that's the thing, is that's the music that she connected to. That's the music she grew up with. And she would sing, and we would talk about things, and she would call me mama all the time. You know, she was very much, very childlike, but that's the soul work that I love doing. I love working with end-stage Alzheimer's and dementia patients because they're just these beautiful pearls. And I loved her. And so when I knew we were taking a turn and things were going down that way, there becomes a point when people are actively transitioning. We talked about pain and, you know, movement, you know, in bed, and how do you provide care to somebody who's in pain like that? And one of the things that we do is we have 250, almost 300 volunteers who make all of our bereavement calls. They make all of our hospice blankets. They volunteer to come out and spend time with our patients. They call our patients every Friday to make sure that they have enough supplies and things to carry them through until the next weekend. And the one thing that our hospice volunteers do is they make gowns, because Medicare does not provide like hospital gowns. And so oftentimes, if we don't have anything like that available to people in home, we, if it's some families feel differently about it, but we will cut up the back of a shirt a little bit so we don't have to completely roll them to make them feel comfortable. And so I got up at like 5:30 in the morning and I drove the 20 miles to the hospice care center in the morning. And I thought, I'm going to get one of these gowns because the family was asking for them. And, you know, I just really wanted to do that for her. And they go like hotcakes. I swear all of the clinicians know like when they're there, because they're never there. So, but one thing that they do is they make these beautiful blankets and they make these little felt hearts. And I thought, well, I cannot show up with nothing. And I had never really done this before. But I thought, I'm going to pick a beautiful blanket and I'm going to pick a beautiful felt heart. And so when I went to give her her bed bath before she passed, and when I was all done and she was dressed, I just put that felt heart in her hands and I covered her with that blanket. And as I usually do, I said my goodbyes and I said, you know, I always tell them have a good journey. I always tell them to, that it's been an honor and a joy to care for them and that I appreciate them. And I did not understand the impact that just that little thing would have, because I feel like things happen for a reason. And I always told her, see you later, alligator. And she'd say, in a while, crocodile. So I told her that when I left her. And, it just so happened that my scheduled routine visit, she had passed, and it was right at that moment. And I had just in my head said to myself, you know, her entire family's been there. I've said goodbye. We've all said goodbye. What is she waiting for? And 5 minutes later, I got the call. And she was my next patient. So it was my responsibility to go there and provide postmortem care. And I dressed her in what her family had brought for her to be buried in. And it was, so when her family came, I just provided them comfort, answered all their questions about what was going to happen. And, you know, we have a triage line that we call, and we have nurses 24/7 that families and clinicians can call for anything at all. And so it was just that whole process of, you know, what's going to happen now, what happens now, and how do we answer these questions? And as I was getting ready to go, the daughter looked at me and said, well, we would like her to be buried with this blanket and this felt heart. And I thought, whoa, like, I never thought that. I mean, it just goes to show you never know what those little actions mean. And to me, that's what hospice care is. And that's what it is that I do. And I am so honored and blessed to do those things for people.
Well, you brought up a lot of memories of me and my mother. I mean,
it certainly seems as though you're happy and fit, a really true mission. It's wonderful. I'm so glad for you.
Thank you.
Very few people really find that kind of niche where so many good things come together.
You know, and like I said, my journey as a certified nurse's aide has groomed me for this. And I think that if we are as certified nurse's aides are open taking the crap in stride that comes with this industry, but still remember and focus on why we do this care. I think that if we pay attention and we learn, we have to be open to learning and taking constructive criticism. We have to be willing to teach our aides. We have to be willing to teach our CNAs. And our CNAs have to be willing to be taught. We have to be willing and open to criticism. And if you feel the same way I do about care and you are open to learning and challenging yourself, put yourself in these positions to learn. I didn't know anything about hospice before I started, other than the fact that they're soul workers. They do such good things. But I didn't know the impact that it would have on me as a human being. And it's been a beautiful experience.
How old are you?
I'm 30. I will be 33 years old on the 16th of May.
So you're 30 years younger than me. I want you there when I die. Let's just make arrangements now.
All right, Mark.
Now,
okay? All right, Dave. All right, Dave.
Adrian, if you want, you better make an appointment.
I mean, what's the date? I need to put it on my calendar.
At what this are you point, you guys about? Are going to have to get in line. There's a long line.
Well, like death, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Anytime.
I'll take you up on that. So how can you be reached? And if you want to put in a plug for your company, are they just local in the Seattle area, or are they nationwide, or what?
It is. So that's the beauty about where I work. We are I'm affiliated with the hospital, Evergreen Hospital, the greater Seattle area. And it is a community-based hospital, one of the last few in the country. So we are not owned by a corporation or any other thing like that. We are our own thing. And I believe that our hospice is nonprofit, but Evergreen Hospice, we serve
my
King.
My daughter lives in Seattle. I'll make sure that if anything happens, that's where she goes.
We provide very good care, but I really want to plug in the Caregivers Hub. You can go to Facebook and type in the search bar Caregivers Hub, not the Caregiver Hub, but Caregivers Hub. There's a link on the Facebook fan page that is a direct link to the support group, Caregivers Hub support group. Any and all caregivers are welcome. And we are doing a hangout tomorrow.
How can we reach you?
So you can email me at caregivershub15@gmail.com.
Okay.
Or you could send the Facebook fan page a message. You can Facebook search Cassidy Bastien and it'll come up. But
good enough.
Caregivers Hub, definitely check it out. It's a great community of caregivers, a lot of dementia, Alzheimer's caregivers and medical professionals. And tomorrow I'm doing a Google Hangout and we are going to talk about the difference between family caregivers and paid caregivers. We are going to try to bridge the gap between the two and at least bring up some really valid conversations about how we should be working together and not against each other. And we need to better understand each other. So that's what we're going to do.
What time is it tomorrow?
Tomorrow at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And the link will be on the Facebook fan page, Caregivers Hub. So you will have access to that.
Well, I'll promote that. I'm sure Adrian will as well. Maybe she will. Yes,
awesome.
I don't have control over Adrian.
Speak for me, but right.
Well, all right, Adrian, how can we get a hold of you if someone wants to do that?
Do you have letters under my name? Because this time I had to sign in.
Yes, I can see my name. Adrian Gruberg, yes.
Oh, look at that. Okay, so I don't have to tell them anymore how to spell my name.
No,
it's Adrian at thecaregiverspace.org. Or just Adrian, www.thecaregiverspace.org for that, or the caregiver space on Facebook. But many communities, a lot of different communities, a lot of different illnesses dealt specifically with.
Smaller groups that are more private.
We have a lot of people.
More private. More private.
What you do.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
And for the audio portion, because we do have a lot of these going out in audio, it is ADRIENNE.
Okay. Oh, yes. Thank you.
See, so many different platforms. So thank you all again. Remember, we're here every week at the same time. So goodbye, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.